Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we'll be reading a story called I Was Part of a Junior Detective Gang in a Small Town with No Monsters. So, we decided to make our own, by Trash Tia. A huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible, and a huge shout out to you for listening. Let's get started. When I was 10, I formed a junior detective squad. Mom bought me the entire box set of What's New Scooby-Doo, and I was inspired to start my very own detective gang. I held auditions outside the gymnasium at recess, serious inquiries only, after a number of kids tried to apply for the role of Scooby-Doo, despite me reiterating I was not interested in playing make-believe. When I was laughed at in class, I made posters strictly asking for serious wannabe detectives, even going as far as using my mom's printer to make flyers, sticking them all over the school. Auditions were simple, asking them to solve a simple riddle. Whoever impressed me got to sign their name down and I'd get back to them. I spent 3 days sifting through kids who definitely had charm, but they lacked the intelligence of a junior detective. Most kids were only auditioning to make fun of me anyway. Still though, I didn't give up. My flyers had 5 requirements. 1. You had to be smart. 2. You were not allowed to be a scaredy cat. 3. You had to accept your inevitable death at the hands of our town's evil villains. 4. You had to have a fully registered driving license. I quickly changed this to a bike. 5. You cannot have a criminal record. I later scribbled this one out, writing over it, "You cannot have any tardies." Narrowing the applicants down to 3 kids, all of whom failed to share my enthusiasm for solving cases. The kids I picked didn't even know how to make plans, and when I invited them to my house, they stole my mom's necklace. I didn't even need to solve the mystery of who stole mom's necklace. The girl was wearing it at school. I punched her in the face and was immediately sent to the principal's office. When I was being given the mother of all lectures, the door quietly opened, a head peeking through. It was Ben Callows, a freckly kid with overgrown brown hair hanging in his eyes. Ben really needed a haircut. He was always wearing the exact same baseball cap, and I found myself wondering if it was permanently glued to his head, stuck on top of unruly brown curls practically matted to his forehead. In class, Ben was also known as Bloody Ben. In the 2nd grade, the boy had a nosebleed in the middle of a spelling test, bleeding all over his paper. It's not like he didn't try and detach himself from the name. Ben brought in Digimon cards, so kids would call him Digimon Ben instead. Then he accidentally spilled yogurt down his shirt in hopes we would call him Yogurt Ben. But no, the kids in our class were relentless in reminding him of his name. No matter what he did, he was still Bloody Ben, and when anything related to blood came up in class, 15 pairs of eyes would swivel to him, like he had invented the concept of bleeding. I feared the nickname would follow him to junior high. Ben didn't wait to be let in. He didn't even knock, striding in with his arms folded. Over the years, Bloody Ben had definitely soured his personality. He smiled rarely, and when he did smile, someone was falling over or hurting themselves, which definitely strengthened the claims of him being a sociopath. The rumor mill was churning, with the latest claiming Bloody Ben killed his cat. That wasn't true. Ben's cat was 17 with cancer, and that was why he was sobbing all the way through reading time. According to Ellie Daly, however, Ben had killed and dissected his kitty and buried her in his mom's flowers. Now, my principal did not like being interrupted, especially when she was in the middle of screaming at me. Principal Mara was old, like 30, in my 10-year-old mind, stick thin like a pencil, and always wore the same stained sweater. She used to be pretty, but I was convinced she had kissed a frog and been cursed. After our old principal suffered a stroke, she stepped in as a temporary replacement, and since becoming principal and banned my favorite book series, Colored Shoelaces, and Hamburger Helper, even officiating a uniform. Vomit green shorts and a tee and plain white sneakers. Kids were convinced she was a witch, and I kind of believed it. Principal Marrow's whole existence was built on sucking the fun out of school. I was already reprimanded for my mystery gang flyers. Her office smelled of peppermint, and she was definitely sneaking sips of whiskey in her coffee cup. I could see the bottle sticking out of the trash. She straightened up, folding her arms across her chest, squinty eyes narrowing at the boy. I'd spent the whole time she was lecturing me trying not to cry, my fists bunched in my lap. I took the distraction as the perfect opportunity to swipe at my eyes, allowing myself to breathe. Ben Callows was her victim now. I was right. The woman's voice was like a thunderclap in my ears. You better have a good reason for not knocking, young man. Ben wasn't fazed by her tone. You took my switch 2 weeks ago, he said. I want it back, or I'm telling my mom. At first, I thought I'd misheard him. No, I was pretty sure he'd threatened our principal. I swore I heard all of the breath sucked from the room. I'm sorry? Principal Marrow cleared her throat. Her soft tone was dangerous. She wasn't being nice. The lady was about to explode. I could see visible veins straining in her temples, her right eye twitching. It was straight out of a cartoon. Did you forget something, Ben? Ben sighed, like she was inconveniencing him. He held out his hand. Please, can I have my switch back? It counts as stolen property. Give it back or I'm telling my mom. The kid put so much emphasis on the word please, I couldn't resist a smile. I think our principal was too shocked to get angry. Get out, she said firmly. I don't have your gaming device. It's in your drawer, Ben nodded to her desk. Under your divorce papers in the restraining order ordered by Jake Willow, the 17-year-old boy you've been having math tutoring sessions with? He quoted the air, his gaze lazily rolling to me. Tutoring. Principal Merrill went deathly pale, her eyes darkening. Benjamin Callows. The school already knows about the restraining order, but your uncle is the head of the Board of Education, so all you get is a slap on the wrist and a warning to leave the boy alone. Ben continued, and I found myself mesmerized by his words. He was a natural, his expression stoic, mouth curved with satisfaction that wasn't quite a smile. However, he held up his phone, pulling it away at the exact moment the teacher attempted to grab it. You were outside Jake Willow's house at 6:12 a.m., drunk, and trying to climb through his window, which I think violates the restraining order, does it not? Ben pretended to think real hard, his gaze flicking to the ceiling. I mean, I'm just a kid, right? His mouth curled into the hint of a smile. What do I know, huh? Principal Merrow's expression twisted, her lip wobbling. Mr. Callows, remove yourself from my office or I am calling your father. Leaning comfortably against the door, Ben's lip twitched. Why? Are you planning on telling my dad about your relations with the teenage boy? Or will I have to tell him instead? I was enthralled and fully disgusted, making a move to inch away from the woman. But it doesn't end there, Ben continued. He straightened up, taking slow, intimidating steps towards the woman's desk. You don't even want Jake, do you? Because once upon a time, you were in love with his father. Jason Willow. You despised him for rejecting you, so you decided to defile his son. Ben leaned over the principal's desk, slipping his hand into the drawer and pulling out his switch. Painfully slowly. She stood there, speechless, her shoulders trembling. Ben smiled and I found myself liking it. Thank you, he said, waving the console in her face. Ben mimed locking his mouth and throwing away the key. My lips are sealed. Ben's half-lidded eyes found mine. Are you coming, Panda? I forgot my own nickname. Panda. I wore my mom's eyeliner because I thought it looked cool. It did not. Finding my breath, I snapped out of it. Jumping up, I followed him out of the office, and when the two of us were safely in the hallway, I burst into hysterical giggles. How did you know all of that? I whisper shrieked. Ben surprised me with a splutter. Wait, you believed me? Something very cold trickled down my spine. I stopped walking. You lied? He shrugged. I had to dig around her office before she caught me a few days ago. Ben swung his arms, a smile curling on his mouth. There's no restraining order, but there is prescription antipsychosis medicine and an extremely detailed story on her laptop about a teacher-student romance, which I presume is a self-insert. Ben shot me a sickly grin. The school refused to make her condition public. He prodded at his own cotton shirt embroidered with the school emblem. Why do you think she's made all those dumb rules? The woman is a certified Looney Tune. I nodded slowly. Wait, what about Jake and his dad? I made them up. I choked out a laugh. And the video? Ben walked faster, pulling out his phone and shoving it in my face. The video was real. Principal Mara was walking around in circles, draped in her nightgown. "It's her own house," he explained. "She locked herself out." Nodding slowly, I was in awe. Bloody Ben was kind of amazing. "But the restraining order isn't real." Ben raised a brow, coming to an abrupt halt. It was his smile that cemented his place in my gang, his lack of empathy for a woman he had gaslit into being a disgusting human being. Ben Callows wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but he fascinated me, maybe for the wrong reasons. "Her filing cabinets are filled with tinned cat food, Panda," he said with an exaggerated sigh. "I'm not psychic, but I think we'll be okay." I turned to him, unable to stop myself jumping up and down with excitement. "Will you be my first?" Ben inclined his head. "Will I be your what?" I shook my head. "Sorry, I mean, will you join my mystery gang?" The boy's eyes lit up and I shoved him playfully. "To solve real cases?" I corrected myself. "Not make them up." Ben wore a real, proper smile, but there was something in his eyes, a darkness that was so hollow and polluted and wrong. I pretended not to see it for the sake of his smarts and intellect. "Well, if you insist, sure." Ben held out his hand, and I shook it. "I'll be your first." We found our second member, who was, ironically, looking for her glasses under the table in class. Lucy Prescott, the quiet girl, was born to be with us. The class eraser went missing, and she found it in the blink of an eye. When questioned, Lucy's face turned as red as her hair. "I asked everyone in the class and followed the clues to the last person who did it." She pointed to Chase Simpson. "Which was Chase, who was throwing it at Marcus Calvin." Twisting around in my chair, I aimed to get Ben's attention, but he was already looking at me, chin resting on his fist, eyes ignited with excitement. The two of us cornered Lucy after class, and when she motioned for us to get back, I dragged Ben, who was a little too excited, to my side. Lucy looked mildly horrified when I said, "Dangerous cases," though her expression pricked with intrigue. She agreed, her gaze lingering on Ben, cheeks smoldering. Our last two members were a surprise. Violet Evergreen was what you would call popular on the middle school hierarchy, not just because her mother was the mayor, but because Violet could get away with murder. The girl refused to wear the school uniform, coloring a single purple streak in her hair to cement herself as the It Girl. She was also one of the girls who started the Bloody Ben rumor. Ben, Lucy, and I were sitting on the grass during recess, trying to come up with a name for our detective service, when Violet came storming over, hands planted on her hips. She was copying how her mother held herself during town meetings. "What are you doing?" Violet demanded. Lucy opened her mouth to answer, Ben nudging her to shut up. "Making a mystery gang?" I told her. "Why?" Violet inclined her head. "Oh?" She folded her arms. "Well, can I join?" Ben stood up, stepping in front of the girl. Violet didn't move, stubbornly standing her ground. "Sure," Ben flashed a grin that didn't quite reach his eyes. He stepped closer to her, his smile widening. "If you can pass the test." Violet's lip curled. She took a single step back. "What kind of test?" Ben nodded to me. "Meet us at the swimming pool at 8 p.m. To my surprise, Violet nodded. "Do I need to bring anything?" "Nope." 8 p.m., the four of us met outside the local swimming pool. Violet was already on the other side of the fence, waving. "Hey, guys." I noticed Ben's expression, his eyes darkening, lip curling. Still, though, he maintained positivity, vaulting over the fence. "You made it." I followed him, helping Lucy, who was immediately freaking out. I didn't blame her. The pool looked cold and dark, a hollow oblivion carved into the ground. Ben and Violet stood on the edge, the two of them shoulder to shoulder. Violet Evergreen was braver than I thought. Standing with her arms at her sides, Violet's hands clenched into fists. "What's the test?" Violet said, her gaze glued to bleeding black depths. "I don't know," Ben murmured, his voice teetering on a giggle. He leaned forwards, arms spread out. "I didn't think you'd actually come to meet us." Violet hummed, stretching out her leg, teasing it across the surface. "Was that the test?" The boy leaned back. I caught the glint of a grin under the floodlights. "Nah." Before I knew what was happening, he shoved Violet into the pool. The girl didn't scream or shriek. She just hit the surface, sinking into pitch dark nothing. Sink or swim, Ben said in a low murmur when Violet's head bobbed underwater. I could see her shadow under the surface, imagining the freezing cold depths pulling her down. Drown, and you can't join us. It was so quiet suddenly, the three of us staring into rippling water. A minute passed and my tummy started to twist. Damn. Ben's expression stayed stoic. I wasn't expecting him to say a bad word. He cocked his head. I thought she could swim. I hit him, holding in a cry. You need to get our parents. But he didn't listen to me, taking a single step and dropping into the pool. I fell on my knees, scanning the water. Lucy was crying. Are they dead? She shrieked. Shh. I was watching two shadows lingering under the water. Violet broke through. I expected her to be crying, but her expression was unwavering. She was silent. I thought the splashing underneath was her legs trying and struggling to tread water, before Lucy shoved me, hard. Panda, what do we do? Looking closer, Violet was perfectly still, her gaze on the sky, while she shoved Ben under the water, drowning him. Violet's eyes sparkled, and somehow, I knew she belonged in the gang. Her gaze found mine, glinting with that darkness, that poisonous streak I found myself drawn to. It was a starving, insatiable need to understand a fractured mind. Know your enemy. Do you want to see if Ben's a witch? Violet asked me, her tone something else entirely. This girl did not make sense, using barely her finger to drown Ben Callows. I knew she was wrong. I knew there was something loose, something unlocked and unbridled and drowning inside her mind and heart. But I wanted more of her. I wanted Violet Evergreen and my detective gang. I think that is why I stood there, frozen. When the thrashing stopped, Ben broke through. He wasn't coughing or spluttering. He inclined his head. You didn't drown. Violet climbed out of the pool, offering her hand. And you're not a witch. He declined her head, taking the steps instead. I asked Violet in a shaky voice. I was trembling with terror, but I was excited, exhilarated. Violet, will you join my gang? She didn't answer me until we were sharing hot cocoa in my house. I told Mom we fell in the pool and she believed me. I should have told her that my friends were sociopaths and I was kind of maybe in love. Violet sipped her cocoa, nodding with a smile I didn't recognize. Violet never smiled at school. Well, she did, but it was always the prick of a cruel smirk. I don't think her smile was genuine, but she was definitely enjoying herself. Our last member came to us, instead of finding him. Jules Howell, a straggly brunette pushing his way in front of me in the lunch line. I didn't really know the kid. He sat at the back of the classroom and slept through most of class. I did like his accent, though. Jules had moved from Melbourne in the second grade. He didn't talk much. When he did, I found myself enveloped in his voice, which sounded like water to me, a bleeding cadence to his tone. Jules piled his plate with fries, smiling widely at the lunch ladies. Saw you last night, he murmured through the perfectly molded grin. Saw me where? At the pool, Jules said. You, Bloody Ben, Violet Evergreen, and that Lucy girl. You were doing a suiciding pact. That's not what we were doing, I said. What's a suiciding pact? When you kill yourself together, Jules said. I saw it in a scary movie my mom was watching. I grabbed a fork. We weren't doing that. His eyes were strange when I took the time to notice them. The excited gleam had fizzled out. Jules' hands tightened around his tray. Then what were you doing? I didn't reply, making my way over to our usual table. Ben was already waving me over, Violet and Lucy holding up the flyers we were making. The Red Blood Detectives. Do you need our help? We can find or solve anything. Contact us on the number below. We take donations. When I bothered turning around, Jules was lost in the crowd of kids. We were on our first official case, searching for Mrs. Lake's missing male when Jules appeared seemingly out of nowhere, and with him, a golden retriever puppy he introduced as Arlo. It took a dog jumping up at them for Violet and Ben to find their real smiles, their real selves slowly seeping through these facades they had built around themselves. Ben dropped to a crouch, ruffling the dog's ears, his smile faint. Who's a good boy? He chuckled. Arlo didn't move, tail wagging, eyes bright. Ben motioned the dog towards him, but Arlo stayed put. Jules joined us quietly. I don't remember asking him, or even him asking me. He just became part of us, side by side with Arlo. We soon came to quickly realize that our town was boring. There were no monsters or thieves or soul-sucking demons, no criminals or serial killers, not even one missing person. We did, however, get calls about missing cats. I turned 11 years old, patiently waiting for a murder or a kid going missing, but there was nothing. All we did was chase cats and the occasional dog, maybe a budgie if we were lucky. 12 years old, our detective club became a joke. The five of us, and Arlo hiding under the table, were trying to pinpoint Mrs. Tracy's lost hamster when three girls came over, dumping their soda all over us. We watched crime shows for inspiration on catching killers. Ben's favorite crime was one that happened in the 80s in our town. Two girls murdered, their intestines stuffed into envelopes and mailed to family members. "That's what we should be solving," he told me one night. "Not missing cats." 13 years old, we lay in Violet's backyard under the cruel glare of the summer sun. We called it working and didn't like to admit it was hanging out or that we were even friends, however. That didn't stop us growing closer, even if it wasn't quite the way I'd expected. I proposed a plan, standing up, wobbling a little off balance. "I've got it," I said, my voice kinda slurry from Violet's special summer cocktail, which was just random alcoholic beverages we found, thrown into a blender and diluted with water. The town wasn't taking us seriously, so we were going to make our own mysteries. I ordered a full-scale assault in our small town, one that they could not ignore. Ben stamped on Mrs. Mason's flowers, and Lucy threw mud pies at people's cars. Jules trashed the high school gym, and Violet and I sprayed painted threats and warnings on every store window. Now, this did cause panic, but also an official curfew. 30 minutes before curfew, we met in our usual spot, deep in the forest near the lake. Ben yelled at me when I was 3 minutes late. He was real passionate about finding a real mystery. "You're late." Ben was sitting on a rock, waving a stick in Arlo's face. The dog still wasn't going near him, whining softly. I took my place, muttering an apology. I had to lie to my mom. Violet, sitting with her legs crossed, idly digging her manicure into the dirt, suggested we buy mannequins and masquerade them as dead bodies, hanging them from the school rafters. Lucy, who had slowly grown out of her shell, becoming a lot more outspoken, nudged her. "That's a stupid idea." The girl groaned, leaning into her. Yeah, you're right. Jules was the only energetic one, standing on the tire swing. He jumped down, definitely twisting his ankle, but his smile only widened, kind of like he enjoyed being in pain. "Why don't we pretend to be kidnapped?" he said, pulling the hood of his sweatshirt over blondish curls growing out. Jules did a dramatic spin, his eyes shining. "We can go missing for like a week, and then when our parents are really scared, we can turn up and tell them we escaped a kidnapping." His lips split into a grin. "And then we solve our own kidnapping." Ben awkwardly patted Arlo's head, only for the dog to pull away with a snort. "I like it," he murmured. "I'm in." Jules' idea was stupid, but it was worth a shot. The five of us agreed to meet the morning after with enough food and supplies for a week. Then we were going to hike to the next town and hide out for a week. It was almost a perfect plan, using ourselves as victims of our own mystery. Packing as much as I could, I kissed my mother goodbye. I told her my pack was for a picnic, and set off to the rendezvous we agreed on. When I arrived, I was the first one there. I checked and rechecked my pack. I waited 10 minutes, unable to contain my excitement. Then 20 minutes. It was getting kind of cold. 1 hour. I sat on a rock for enough time to watch the sky change color. When the clouds were orange, I stood up and stumbled back home. They had gone without me. Mom lectured me when I got home, and I stuck to the plan of pretending my friends had gone missing, even if they had betrayed me. Ben said he'd text me when he arrived at the rendezvous. I at least expected him to text an explanation, but there was nothing. I was in the dark, and after 3 days of nothing, our town finally began to take us seriously. "Our children have been kidnapped!" the adults were screaming. Mom was crying in the kitchen, praying to a god I knew she didn't believe in, that I wasn't taken next. I was interviewed and stuck with the exact same story I came up with when I was with the others. Our plan was to return after a week, claiming to be locked up in a dark room with a masked man. I told my mother and the other parents that I didn't know where my friends were, repeating the same thing over and over again until I was tongue-tied. I saw them the day before they went missing, and yes, everything seemed okay. I slowly sipped my glass of milk provided, looking the sheriff directly in the eyes. No, I didn't notice anything suspicious, Sheriff. Yes, I'm sure, sir. No, they didn't tell me anything. It was Ben's mother who shattered my mask. Did I know about... what? I whispered. Something warm filled the back of my mouth, foul-tasting milk erupting up my throat. I leaned forward, trying to look Mrs. Callows in the eye. No, I didn't know about Ben's condition. Mrs. Callows was screaming at me about her son's troubled past when I barfed all over myself, my eyes burning. In the privacy of my own room, I sobbed until I couldn't breathe. I tried to tell Mom, but we had come so close. One more day, and the others would be back. But that day came. I sat cross-legged at our usual spot, which was now covered in police tape. I waited for their thudding footsteps, their laughter congratulating each other for coming up with a great plan. I waited, my face buried in my knees for my friends. It was dark when my phone vibrated, and I'd fallen asleep. I wasn't scared, forcing myself to my feet. "Where are you?" Mom yelled down the phone. "Coming home now," I muttered. "Sorry," I paused, holding my breath against a cry. "Mom," I broke down, forcing my fist into my mouth to hide my squeak. "Mommy, did they come back?" Mom didn't reply for a moment. "I'm so sorry, baby," she whispered, ending the call. I took my time walking home that night. There were no stars in the sky. When a hand clamped over my mouth, I could smell him. When he dragged me back, stabbing a kitchen knife into my throat, I stared at the sky and looked for stars. His arms were warm around me, violently pulling me into the back of a pickup truck. The pickup truck he'd said he was bringing. It was his grandfather's, and he could just about drive it. Hitting the back seat, my body was numb, my thoughts in a whirlwind. The pickup flew forwards, and I remembered how to move. I rolled off the seat, my hands pinned behind my back. Twisting around, blinking in the dim, I could feel something warm, something seeping across upholstery seats. Blood. It was everywhere, sticky on my hands and wet on my face when I struggled to get up. I was lying in someone's blood. A scream clawed its way out of my throat. The pickup flew over a pothole and something dropped off the seat, Arlo's leash. I screamed again, this time his name gritted between my teeth. I didn't stop screaming until the jerking movement stopped. The doors opened, pale light hitting me in the face. Flashlight. Warm arms wrapped around me, pulling me from the car, and then pulling me by my hair into our old treehouse. It was always our secret place, our saving grace on the edge of town. The flickering candlelight caught me off guard, illuminating my surroundings. Two bodies slumped over each other, lying in stemming red. I felt suffocated, like I was going to die. I screamed, and that warm hand cradled my mouth again, gagging my cries. Violet and Jules. There was something wrong with them, and it was only when I forced myself to look closer when I realized their insides had been carved out. Heart, stomach, everything pulled out. There was paper on the floor. No, not paper, but envelopes. Envelopes stuffed with gore, bright red leaking through white. Shuffling back, my brain was too slow to react, while my body was trying to vault to my feet, only to be violently pulled back by my ponytail. I felt his fingers twining around my hair, reveling in my screams. With another tug, my head was forced forwards. Orange candlelight felt almost homely, this time lighting up a third body. Lying on their back, curled up, pooling scarlet dried into the floorboards, their wrists restricted with duct tape. I could feel blood underneath me, sticky, a congealing paste. Do you know what happened on October 3rd, 1987 in our town? Lucy Prescott stood over me, her arms folded across her chest. I managed to shake my head when she grabbed Ben's legs, dragging him under the candlelight. I dazedly watched her stroke the blade of a carving knife, the teeth already stained scarlet. "The intestine murders," Lucy hummed, tracing the knife down the floorboards. "A man murdered two high school girls, carving out their insides and sending their pieces to their loved ones." Lucy's eyes found mine, ignited in a familiar gleam. I saw it in Principal Merrow's office, then the swimming pool, the cafeteria. It was the sheriff's only murder case, Panda. Ever since then, our town has been boring. There's no mysteries to solve, nothing to find. The girl jumped to her feet, retrieving a blood-stained envelope. She held it up, a smile curved on her lips. The girl turned around and I heard a horrific squelching sound. Lucy held up a bright red sausage, ripped into it, and slipped it into the white paper. "But I can change that," she said in a giggle. "I can create a real serial killer who we can hunt down together." Lucy stabbed the blade into the floor, laughing. "Or I can bring a fan favorite back. I can bring the intestine killer back from the dead." Her gaze flicked to the others. "There are casualties, of course. The story is I was kidnapped with Ben, Violet, and Jules. The scary intestine killer killed them, and I managed to get away." Lucy shuffled over to me, her eyes wide. "Then he came back and struck again." With those words, she shoved me onto my back. "First, he took Violet." Lucy hummed, tracing the blade down my shirt. "Then, Jules." I squeezed my eyes shut, pulling at the restraints around my wrists. "Then, Ben." Her breath tickled my cheek. "And finally, Panda." Lucy lifted the knife and I accepted my death, until a low rumble in my ears, shouting, thundering footsteps followed by the pitter-patter of paws. "Lucy!" The sheriff was screaming, and the girl stumbled to her feet, the knife slipping from her fingers. Lucy stumbled, tripping over Ben's body. "He got away!" she shrieked. He killed him! Oh God, please help me!" I don't think Lucy even realized the traces she'd left behind. The blood slick on her fingers, her manic, grinning smile full of mania. I was looking for stars when an officer crouched over me. I couldn't understand what she was saying. Her voice was white noise. "Rachel, hey, try and sit up, honey. Your mom is on her way." Instead of listening to her, I curled into myself. My gaze found Arlo sticking his nose in Ben's hair, trying to nudge the boy awake. I didn't fully register the next few days. They went by in a confusing blur. Part of me tried to eat and spend hours with my head pressed against the toilet seat. I could still see the slithering, scarlet remains of my friends every time I closed my eyes. There was so much red, soaked in that haunting, orange light. Blood that I could still see, a starless sky that stretched on forever. Weeks went by, then months. I think I turned 14, I wasn't sure. I didn't feel alive anymore. I stood at my friends' funerals with a single rose I dropped into their casket. Violet's mother was quick to cover the whole thing up. Lucy's plan didn't work after all. Our town's murder case stayed stagnant at one. It's been 4 years since my friends were murdered by our Velma. Now at 17, Mom asked if I wanted to visit Lucy in juvie. I'm not even upset or angry anymore. I want to know why. Ben picked me up. Arlo was at his side, wagging his tail. Ben was different. He dumped his baseball cap and gotten a haircut, swapping his old wardrobe of drab colors for an attempt at changing style. That day, he looked awkward in a short-sleeved tee and shorts. At school, Ben is no longer Bloody Ben. Now he is Survivor Ben. I'm still Panda. Every time I was with him, I felt like my soul was being sucked out. Guilt so deep, so damn painful, I lost my breath. I live knowing that I immediately assumed it was him that day. Ben was barely alive when I found him. Lucy had started to carve into him before remembering she needed me. After admitting it to him, his lips formed a small smile. "Can I tell you a secret?" he said to me at 16. "Yeah?" Whatever he was going to say, Ben never told me. Presently, I nodded at the dog's new collar. "Peppa Pig themed," the boy shrugged, ruffling Arlo's ears. "FYI, he chose it." "It's cute," I said. "Very chic." We didn't speak the whole ride, but Ben did entangle his hand in mine. We spent half an hour outside the detention center. I was panicking and Ben was trying to hide that he was panicking. In the end, we joined hands and strode through the doors together. Lucy greeted us with a wide smile, just as psychotic. The orange jumpsuit suited her, though I had zero idea why. "Hey, Arlo," she giggled at the dog, and Ben pulled the pup onto his lap. "Ben," she sighed, I wish I got to finish you. I would have loved to solve the mystery of your gutted corpse. Ben's smile was wry. Nice to see you too. Behind a glass screen, I asked Lucy one simple question. Why? Lucy didn't reply, or she did, but it was just nonsensical crap. But there was one thing she said that stuck with me, chilling me to the core. I am terrified of Lucy, of what she's done, and of what she's capable of doing. It was a throwaway line, and I don't even think Ben noticed. Or he did, and was in denial. Lucy's smile was wide, her eyes empty, pools of nothing. The exact same glint in Ben's eyes, Jules' eyes, Violet's eyes. Like something was gnawing away at their psyche, twisting and contorting it, filling them with darkness, poison that was so vast, so endless, I had craved it as a child. I still don't know what it is, but I'm going to find it. Lucy's laugh was shrill, and next to me, Ben didn't move a muscle. I don't even wear glasses. That's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, I'd love it if you'd subscribe for more or like the video. Even hearing your comments in the comments section down below, or I don't know if you can even leave comments where you're listening from, but if you're on YouTube, you can, and that'd be really sweet. If you'd like to support the channel further, there is a Patreon available. It really does mean the most. It just kind of helps keep things going forward. But I would also really love to see you in our Discord if you're so inclined. I would love it if you'd come join us and talk with us. It'd be great to see you. If you'd like to send me your story to read, head over to storiesaftermidnight.com, where there will be a link to do that. And with all that said, thank you for listening. We will see you in the next one.